D-Mace, Vingan, and Donick, 102.5. The Game, broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, David Janes, Predators General Manager Barry Trotz, leafing through Nashville Lifestyle's 25 Most Beautiful People.
Yeah, there's Luke Evangelista on the front. I never saw that. Looks really good. He looks great, actually.
He does. I didn't make the cut, unfortunately.
Yeah, I didn't make the cut either. it does say most beautiful people. That's why he didn't make it.
That is true. Nobody has ever confused me for being beautiful. Barry, with the Tampa Bay Lightning in town tonight, I want to start on Steven Stamkos.
Yeah.
And I'll level with you. I'm beginning to wonder if Steven Stamkos has lost a step. One goal, 2 points in 10 games. I acknowledge that some bad luck, could be involved, but I feel like I haven't noticed him as much on the ice. Andrew Burnett has moved him all over the lineup. He's back at center now.
Yeah.
Nothing seems to be working. What more can you do to get him going, and how concerned are you by the start to his season?
Well, you're always concerned all the time when you want everybody going. I just find that for the most part, in all my coaching career, it's a little bit like whack-a-mole. You can get three lines going. You can't get all four lines, and if you do, you're going to probably go on a decent run. But that's a lot of times it doesn't get going. I think with Steven, I still think that he's got the hockey IQ. He's still got the shot. He can still skate. You know, you look on the tracking models. When he goes, he can go. I just think he's watching the game a little bit. Sometimes you get in your own head because you're not – it's not happening as easy for you. Obviously Andrew's been moving him around. And sometimes when you move around a player, you know, he can feel it too. He's, you're trying to get me going and I can't produce or haven't been able to at this point. I sort of look through the whole long process. So, we asked all our veteran players, hey, in our mind's eye, we'd like to have a young guy in each line, two veterans and a young guy. And they bought in. They really have. Starting with Steven and Marchie and Roman, I can go O'Reilly. They all bought in big time. And they said, yeah, absolutely. That's where we got to go if we're going to be successful. And so what happened, you know, he started with Svechkov as, you know, on his line. And we went through all the lines. And then the missing piece was Luke. Not at training camp. And now I'm looking at the, you know, three players. There's three players I'd really like to get going a little bit and piece together. You know, all three of those guys haven't had the start that we'd all like. So maybe there's something to that. But I think over time, you look at the Steven, probably you could say I don't know if he's been a slow starter over his career, but at the same time, I feel pretty strongly that when all the dust settles, he's going to get his share of points, and he's going to be a big factor for us.
We had Sportsnet's Elliot Freeman on the program on Thursday. We have him every Thursday. We were talking about Stamkos, and he wondered if, depending on how things go with the team, if there will come a point when you and Stamkos have to sit down and discuss which path is best for him and the organization moving forward. Is that something that's crossed your mind?
I think of everything all the time. To say it hasn't, it would be a lie. But at the same time, I try to prepare for everything. I'm not looking to do anything there. I do make sure that Steven can make his mark here. I mean, that was one of the reasons that I wanted to get Steven is that, you know, I knew it was going to be a tough process coming from Tampa Bay, where he was drafted, where he lived, where he's going to probably retire. And there was a lot of bonds and a lot of successes and a lot of, you know, water under the bridge in terms of his time there. And then I knew there was going to be an adjustment period. And then I was hoping that Stammer could really make his mark here. He could, you know, I think at some point they're probably going to put up a statue up in Tampa Bay, or, you know, he's going to go in their Wall of Fame or their Ring of Honor, whatever you want to call it. For sure, his jersey's going to get retired there. But I really felt strongly like he can be a guy that can make a mark here. And I believe it right now, and I'm hoping that, you know, his mark is not only, you know, producing on the ice, but getting us to the next level with our young guys.
You mentioned, Barry, trying to get him going, using him in different roles. And I know you've said before that ideally you were hoping that he wouldn't have to play center.
But yeah.
So what did you see the other night? Talking to Andrew Burnett, he seemed somewhat encouraged. He thinks this could be a good thing, at least for now, of something that could jumpstart him.
Well, one of the things that when a player is say in his own, not in his own way, but struggling a little bit, and sometimes you take them out of their zone. I think you get in a little bit of rut. Like we watched a lot of Stammer, and I go by and I ask the coaches what they see and all that, and they felt that he was just getting a little bit paralyzed with the game and watching the game rather than just participating the way he usually does. So they felt really strongly, you know, and Svetch wasn't really going really well as well, that they said, you know what, maybe we can get Stammer going and we'll put him in the middle. He seems to skate more in the middle. He has the puck more in the middle. And that's where he gets excited, and that's where he's been productive. So I like the move by Andrew, actually putting a Stammer in the middle to sort of try to reinvent a little bit and look at the game a little different. I do know this, that good things happen when you can get the puck in Steven Stamkos' hand. I watch our power play, the early struggles that we had. He never had the puck. He never got the puck. So how are you going to be productive? So that's not only on Steven, that's on the whole group. To get him the puck. I mean, he does one thing very, very well, and he shoots it and he can make plays from it. But you can't do any of that if you don't have the puck. So a little bit goes on everything. Maybe with Svetch being a left-handed guy, he's sometimes maybe defaulting, hanging on to it, and not giving up to the Stammer side enough, and then all of a sudden you become an irrelevant player. It's like in football, we have you have your receivers go out, you're targeting the primary guy the whole time, and everybody else is fantasy. So people defer to different guys just because of the if they're left-handed, right-handed a little bit more. Where you get the puck on the ice, what you see when you move it. I think Stammer really needs to play the give-and-go guy. If there's one thing I'd like to see Svetch do is give-and-go a little bit more. So maybe it's as simple as that. We just got to, take a little break from each other, just sort of reset and go from there. And I know that that's what they're doing with Svetch, because he's a young player and he wants to be productive, but he hasn't been very productive at this point. It's not that we don't believe in him. I think sometimes those resets sort of get you reset, and then you come back and you're very productive. So it's a long season, and it's a long career. So missing a game here or there doesn't make a big difference in the long plan.
The power play, they got a big one the other night. And unfortunately, they didn't get too many other chances the rest of the night. It would have been nice to see if they could get a little confidence and momentum.
Yeah.
Every coach has been through it, where you go through a few weeks and your power play is just not connecting. It becomes something, I'm sure, that you try to figure out everything, right? There's superstition involved and changing things up. What did you try to do when you were trying to break out of a slump that way?
Well, every coach will tell you, hey, just simplify. And everybody will go, well, what's simplifying? Let's move the puck quicker. Let's shoot the puck more. Let's crash the net. Let's get into the 5-on-5 mentality, where you're moving the puck and you're trying to create with some pace, and see if you can get a dirty goal. You got to retrieve some pucks. And some of the best power plays in the league are the ones that are keep it real simple and retrieve pucks and sort of have that 5-on-5 mentality. You don't really think they're I was looking the other day. I had a meeting with some people, and they were giving me a little grief on our power play. And I looked in the power play stats, and we're above or tied with Colorado and I think it was Carolina, and they've got pretty dominant people at in their lineup. So sometimes the power play is, because it's, you have the advantage, you think you slow things up and you're looking to pass the puck into the net. I think the good power plays don't want to pass the puck in the net. They want to shoot it more. They want to get those secondary, make plays off the chaos. When there's chaos, you tend to make plays a lot better, and you get more opportunity. Conversely, when your power play is trying to pass it into the net and everything's very predictable, it's easy to kill too. So I think we're just the our power play can have more pace to it, a puck pace to it, and then a little more shooting mentality, and we'll be fine.
We asked Ellie about this, but it seems like there's everywhere you go, if you're looking at an article about things going on around the league, it seems like there are a ton of teams that are looking for center help. And you've made no secret over the last couple of years that centers are really hard to find. You'd love to have more. You've got a couple in the pipeline that you think down the road are. But what are you seeing right now as you look? I mean, that's I'm sure you have a lot of GMs calling you saying, boy, it's dry right now, the centers that are available.
Every general manager I talk to, there's maybe only, you know, two or three that could say, hey, I'm fine at center ice. The rest of us are looking for anything. You know, we're looking for retired people coming out, you know. it's a position that just got really lean, and it's really important.
Why do you think that is?
I don't know. The last couple draft classes, last year was obviously there was a lot of centermen in it, but the year before there wasn't a lot, you know. And I don't know why kids aren't wanting to play center. Maybe it's a lot more work to play center ice than it used to be. I don't know. I think usually, you know, I always look at what the kids want to do. You know, who's the best player in the game? Connor McDavid. What position? He's center. So I think every kid would want to be Connor McDavid. I want to play center. When I was growing up, you know, Bobby Orr was the guy, and everybody wanted to be Bobby Orr. You know, I don't know why there's not that many. I think it's a hard position to master. But I think it's also the position where you can make a really big difference. So I don't know what we're trying to draft them, and we're trying to develop them, and we just need time. I mean, really encouraging this weekend. We made a deal with San Jose for Edstrom, and he had a tremendous weekend. He was really good. You know, he got a couple points, but I mean, his whole game translated to the National Hockey League. He's got a lot of substance to it. He's not going to wall you. And, you know, you look at Brady Martin coming down the middle, and Svech is doing a good job. I mean, he's in a little bit of a dry spell, but Svech is still a very young player. So we've got some guys coming, and we'll continue to draft. I'm going to dog our whole scouting staff. Where, you know, I want people in the middle. I want some more size on our team, especially you know, I think we've got the very mobile puck-moving defensemen that are here now and are coming. I want more size. I need more Nick Hags and Perbix type of players in our system. You know, Andrew Gibson's one of the few young guys that are fit that profile that are really big. So, you know, we're continuing to build there, but I think we got the smaller skilled wingers down right now.
Barry Trotz is with us. Correct me if I'm wrong, Barry. Did Bill Haslam join the team on the Canadian road trip a couple of weeks ago?
Yes, he was with us, and then he left us at the end, yes.
What is it like when the owner joins the team on the road, and what were his observations about how things are going?
Well, that's probably a better question for Bill Haslam than it is for Barry Trotz, but I can tell you that Bill Haslam is a great owner. He's a fan as well, and he wants nothing better for us to do well, nothing better for giving our players all the tools to succeed, and wanting a plan for the future of where we want to go. So, you know, when we are together, we talk about, you know, what I'm trying to do, why I'm trying to do it. He's still learning the game. He's still learning the hockey business, the hockey world, and he loves the game. Like he loves the game, which is fantastic. If you're a participant in Smashville at all, it's great. It's probably music to your ears that we have such a great owner.
When you evaluate the team's performance, how much emphasis do you place on winning versus the process, regardless of the result? And where have you seen the most improvement in the overall process so far this season?
Well, I always look at the process. I shouldn't say I always do. When I was younger, I always looked about wins and losses because you're just that's all that you care about. because I think when you're young, you're worried about your job all the time. As I got older, I figured the process always overran everything, because I know when I've come into games, after games, I've come into, you know, we've played a bad game, I'll rip into our guys. If we've won, I'll rip into them. If we've played a great game and lost, I'll praise them. I think you have to be, if everything's just on wins and losses, it's really going to be hard. Probably from a fan standpoint, that's the most important thing. But from a management standpoint and a building, you know, I don't want to build a team that's just going to make the playoffs. I want to build a team that could eventually win a cup. And that process is going to take some time. But, yeah, I always look at the process, you know. Are you playing well? Are you playing together? Not everybody's going to be perfect. I mean, if everybody was perfect, we'd never – no, both teams would never score a goal. So there's going to be a lot of mistakes. It looks really easy when you're in the – I'm in the crow's nest. Now, the game's so easy from up there. But when you're behind the bench and you're playing the game, the angles, the speed, guys bearing down on you, the pucks bouncing, a guy gives you a pass and it's not flat. You don't see a guy because the ref's in front of you. There's so many things going on that it is such a hard game to perfect. And so you know, you always hear about coaches, we got to simplify our game. We got to eliminate our mistakes. You're never going to eliminate all your mistakes, but the catastrophic ones, the ones that keep repeating, those are the ones that you can. And so, either with changing of personnel or mindset, just like we talked about power play, if our mindset's a little bit different, our production's maybe a little bit different. And then, you know, when you don't have success, then you look for that perfect play rather than instinctive. Being really instinctive and making that play that you always made all your life. So different pressures give you different results.
Have you seen improvement in the areas that you wanted to see improvement in terms of that process? So far, yeah.
I mean, you know, I thought our 5-on-5 game was, as I said, I thought it was terrible last year. And I thought this year that it's much better. I mean, we've played some really good teams. You look at the team's records that we've played. They've been really good, and our process has been good. I haven't felt overwhelmed like last year. There was games that you felt like we're really overwhelmed here. We won't be able to correct this tonight. They're just way better than you. I haven't felt that way. I felt there's going to be every game. There's going to be parts of the game that you're going to feel overwhelmed, and then hopefully you can overwhelm the other team. And it goes back and forth. When you're getting overwhelmed, can you not give up a goal? Can you sort of bend but not break? I see more of that this year. A little bit is goaltending. A little bit is our defense. A little bit is our mindset. The other night, I think they're all blending in. We had so many games this last week, but we had a shift that was about 2 minutes long, but at the end of the day, there was no chances. The other team had the puck. We kept them to the outside. Guys were committing the block shots when they needed to, and they did. And as a coach or even a fan, sometimes you're going, oh, you know, stop it, you know, get the puck back. Sometimes just keeping it on the outside and them getting no chances, it's a little bit of an illusion. You can have the puck all you want, but as long as you don't have it in the dangerous areas, I'm okay with it. And I did that in the island when we were in with the Islanders. We had the worst defensive team in the National Hockey League in the last 10 years, and we became the first. We ended up being the best at the end of the year. Our goaltenders won the Jennings Trophy as the best goals against, and we cut off 100 goals, which is, I don't know if it's been done before. And there was times when we had 2 minute shifts against us, but you weren't going to get into the high danger areas because we were not going to let you. And there's times when our team, you know, either tired or you get caught on a change and you have to survive. And we've been able to survive most nights.
I want to ask you about a real positive story. Spencer Stastny, he's told his story publicly. Yeah. Last year at this time, he wasn't even really playing hockey. He was trying to get right mentally. And then he had, you know, a really tough year for sure. So I'm sure when you came into training camp, you weren't exactly sure what to expect, but here he is. He's playing maybe the best he's ever played, fair to say?
Really? I am so proud of Spencer for coming out and telling his story, because it takes a lot of courage to talk about that journey. You know, some of the things that he really didn't train, didn't want to be here. He knew he was going to, you know, maybe retire, all that. And to see him walking around with a smile on his face and having joy when he plays, and joy just being on a day-to-day basis of being part of the Nashville Predators, I think it's such a great story. And then the other thing that I like about him is, he looks so much more powerful because he's put the time and effort into it. But now he's trying to add that offensive part of his game, because his skating is elite. Like, there's a couple of us, when you're up in the crow's nest and he takes off, you just wish that you could get up the ice once like that in your lifetime to see how fast that is. But I love the fact that he's trying to do things offensively. Before, he would just play a safe game. He'd once in a while jump up, but really wasn't a threat. Now he's becoming a threat, more and more of a threat. And he always was a guy that can defend well and transport the puck. So, he's getting a real good foundation for being a good defenseman.
Predators general manager Barry Trotz has been our guest on D-Maze, Ving, and Adonic. He joins us every Tuesday during hockey season at 5 o'clock. Barry, it's always a pleasure to see you. Good luck tonight. We'll talk next week.
We'll take luck anytime. You know that. This is a long season, and we played a lot of games. And I'm really proud of our fans. This last week we had a lot of games.
This is the fifth home game in 8 days.
Yes.
A lot of time here in Smashville.
And it is a lot of time in Smashville. And the crowd has been great. The energy has been great. And the commitment from them has been exceptional, because I know how hard our people work upstairs in the ticket office and in the game ops, and just as a general manager and the coaches, like, it's been a hard grind. So it's a grind not only for the players and everybody involved, but also the fans. There's a big commitment. It's not easy to get downtown like it used to be. So I really want to thank them. They've been great.
Thank you as always, Barry. 615-737-1025. We're off the air a little bit earlier tonight because of the earlier puck drop at 6:45, so we'll wrap up the show next. Willie Darnick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 1025 The Game. D-Mace, Vingan, and Darnick, 1025 The Game. Derek Mason, Adam Vingan here with you live at Bridgestone Arena. Willie Darnick has departed as he prepares for the FanDuel Sports Network broadcast. Lightning versus Predators coming up at 6:45 p.m. Yet another reminder, 6:45 p.m., pregame starting in 15 minutes with Max Prima Donna Hers right here on 102.5 The Game, because he doesn't like when I use his headset or the way I wrap up his cord. Max is a professional. He's a bit of a diva, man. I've learned over the past 15 or so minutes. But
just a little bit of a diva.
But Max Hers will have your pregame show in 15 minutes.
Hey, diva looks good on Max.
Yeah. You would think Max Hers is low maintenance, but would be wrong.
He exactly.
He is high maintenance. High maintenance Hers, that's what they call him.
That's what I've heard.
Double H.
Yes. High maintenance Hers, that's what they call him. So the reason why the game is earlier tonight is because all 32 teams are in action tonight around the NHL. It's called the Frozen Frenzy. And ESPN, I think, is doing an NHL version of Red Zone, basically. Mm-hmm. They'll hop around all of the different games, hence why the Predators start at 6:45 instead of the customary 7 o'clock. But we'll see if the Predators can wrap up their homestand with a win. If my math is right, they are 2-2 on the homestand.
Yep, they are.
Losses to the Ducks, wins against the Canucks and the Kings, a 9-round shootout win on Saturday, and they lost to the Dallas Stars on Sunday. But Steven Stamkos' old teammates are in town with the Tampa Bay Lightning, and that game is coming up again at 6:45. Interested to see how Steven Stamkos does. I asked Barry Trotz about Steven Stamkos. I'll admit I'm a bit concerned about Steven Stamkos. He hasn't looked like the Steven Stamkos that the Tampa Bay Lightning fans that they see on the concourse here were accustomed to watching over 15-plus years in Tampa Bay. We'll see if Steven Stamkos can get off the schneid tonight against his old team. Let's get back to some of your reaction. We've had a very busy show. We've talked Titans and the trade deadline. The NFL trade deadline is a week from today. We've talked about Vanderbilt and the college football playoff. Trevor Maddich joined us as well. Here's one text we didn't get to. One texter wants your opinion, Derek. Mm-hmm. Femi Oladejo had 5 solo tackles, 13 total tackles, and no sacks, and is now in IR with a calf injury. How much did the scouts weigh in on deciding to use a valuable second-round pick on a project rather than getting a proven talent in the draft? Or was this a Brinker-Borgondi decision? I've not heard anyone touch on the lack of production from Derek Morgan 2.0.
I can tell you, they were high on him.
He looks the part.
Yeah, he looks the part. They knew that he was playing a different position. They knew that this would be a project, that he's a guy that has tremendous upside. But just because you have tremendous upside doesn't mean you can't fulfill that upside. So what they did with drafting him, it was a gamble. They're rolling dice, and they're betting that, you know, with this athletic talent and his measurables, that he will be a good player eventually. Listen, you can't, as much as the Titans wanted us to look at him and say, oh, he's going to be our guy this year. He's going to get sacks. He's a guy that's learning a new position, and he's raw. He should have been a guy that they allowed just to develop and throw him in a few times, but he shouldn't be the guy that you're asking, go get me sacks. Does he have the potential to do it? Yeah, but potential is nothing if you can't make it all come together. I'm not saying this young man will not end up being good, but this year was just a rookie year for him. Especially, it compounds it when you're just learning a new position. So I'm not sure how good Femi will be. He has some flashes here and there, but he still struggled to get to the quarterback. He still struggled at reading what the offense is doing. And he gets caught in situations that rookies get caught in. So hopefully, you know, him on IR, he can learn even more. And then I'm not looking for him to be this all-world guy this year. This is a 2 to 3 year project with Femi. That's what it is. And that's what they don't want to tell you. They hope he hits next year or as the season continues to go. But this was a 2 to 3 year project. That's all it was. And they hoping that he is more closer to what they thought he was than not.
My question, though, and this is a question that a lot of Titans fans had earlier in the season, and I don't know the answer to this. Mm-hmm. How often are projects taken as high in the draft as Femi Oladejo? I think that's what some Titans fans are upset about with the selection of Femi Oladejo. If you knew he was switching positions, mm-hmm. which he did near the end of his college career,
yes.
If you knew all of that, why use a premium pick on him? Although, to be fair, if you look at mock drafts, pull up the final mock
drafts.
Yeah,
everybody had him around the
NFL. He was a second or third yes. round player. But that's the concern I hear from a lot of Titans fans is, well, if he was going to be a project, why spend a second round pick on a project?
A lot of teams do it. We may not hear about it, but a lot of teams do it. A lot of teams, you know, look at the potential of a player and they try to estimate, you know, how long or predict how long it will take for that player to reach that potential. And some guys reach it faster than others, and some guys never reach it at all. But a lot of these guys, you would be – the caller would be more surprised, or the texter, excuse me, be more surprised because it happens more times than not. Whether it's the third round – because you got to understand now the way these drafts are and the way – and how it's so important to build a team – really, that first 4 rounds, those are critical rounds. And if you go through everybody's draft, I would say over the last 10 years, I'm sure he would be surprised there are more projects drafted in the first 4 rounds than there aren't.
David James has brought to my attention this from the ESPN PR team. Easy for me to say. This is what I love about public relations. Mm-hmm. The way that they can spin certain things. College game day's trip to Vanderbilt scored the most watched week 9 episode ever. Now, I'm not going to go back through every week 9 and see where they went, but according to ESPN PR, game day's trip to Vanderbilt scored the most watched week 9 episode ever. 2.5 million average viewers, a peak of 3.5 million. 3.2 million final hour plus viewers, beating the competition by 153%. Okay, let's see. Most watched week 9 episode ever, up 28% over 24 week 9 at Indiana. So I'm going to go back and look at which team the Hoosiers played in week 9 last year.
That is true cherry picking, but I like it.
Yes.
Because it's Vanderbilt. I like it.
Yes.
So, but that is true.
A lot of people
picking.
Watched, which is
exactly.
good.
Exactly. A lot of people watched. That's all that matters.
A lot of people watched,
I don't
which
care.
Is good.
I don't care if it was the most watched on a Saturday when the moon didn't shine as brightest and the sun wasn't out. I don't care. They still hold that record.
Okay. If my math is right, Derek Mason, week 9 last season, well, that can't be right.
What?
Because it was on the road at Michigan State. It would have been maybe the home game against Washington. They played Washington at home on October 26th. That sounds right. And Indiana won 31-17. So I guess Vanderbilt, Missouri was more appealing than Indiana, Washington.
Oh, you dang sure it was. Who wants to see Washington play?
I don't know. People from Washington.
Well, that's it. So, everybody was watching Vanderbilt.
So congratulations to Vanderbilt. The most watched week 9 episode of College Game Day.
I'm taking it. I'm going to take that and I'm going to run with it, okay?
Small victories.
Exactly. Thank you, David.
Look,
small victories.
2.5 million average viewers, peak of 3.5 million. Uh-huh. That's great. And Willie detailed his experience from College Game Day over the weekend. He talked about it yesterday on the show. And it looked great on television.
Yeah, it did.
So kudos to Vanderbilt. Hair Metal Henry on our text line says, that's like saying week 9 of my wife's pregnancy was the best week 9 of pregnancies everywhere.
And it could have been. You just never know.
In my experience,
you don't have the stats for it yet.
In my experience, week 9 of pregnancy, I'm judging based on my wife's pregnancies. It's not good.
It's not been good. So long for me. I couldn't tell you what a week 9 pregnancy looked like.
So
it's been so long for me. Listen, that's another thing Vandy can hold on to.
Yes.
We were the most watched
week 9 episode
week 9
of College Game Day ever.
Exactly.
Can
Kudos
you fit that
Vandy.
On a banner somewhere on campus?
I can try if you want.
It's a little wordy. Quickly, Mike from Clarksville says, speaking of drafts, can you talk about how much John Robinson's last 3 drafts have affected our current Titans team right now? Is there anyone left from those drafts? There is one.
Yes.
One. Chigakonkwo.
He's the only
one. And Chigakonkwo
person.
Might be gone by a week from today when the NFL trade deadline hits, but that'll do it for us. Again, a shortened show, just a little bit, because Predators pregame with Max Herz, Max High Maintenance Herz, is coming up next. We will talk to you tomorrow at 3 o'clock.
Be loved, love on your people. Have a safe, blessed, and wonderful Tuesday. I love you. The team loves you. You hear that music, don't you forget about us, because we will be back at 3 o'clock. Not here, but we will be back. Peace.